I would like to thank, first of all, thank my classes, Zheng Shi, Bob Thomas, and Dan Surrett. Zheng and Dan were the students that did most of the work. Most people know the climate change story already, so I'm not going to go into too much into that. The key message here is that we know that anthropogenic greenhouse gas contributions are huge, and 45% of those anthropogenic greenhouse gases are staying in the atmosphere. And for me, as I guess as a terrestrial ecologist, we are interested in increasing the carbon sequestration in the terrestrial ecosystem. Currently, the estimation is 29%. So in the Canadian scenario, I guess in Western Canada in particular, we were considering to use hybrid poplar plantations or fast-growing tree species, growing trees to sequester carbon. When the Canadian Forest Service did a study on the potential to economically plant trees in Western Canada on the prairie, they didn't really find anywhere in Western Canada to be economical to plant hybrid poplars or any other fast-growing tree species if there was no carbon credit to be claimed. But as soon as there is $15 per ton CO2 equivalent carbon credit to be claimed, they find that this boreal transition zone, this is indicated here in this kind of red belt, would be economical, somewhat economical, and the economic return in terms of the internal rate of return would be somewhere between 3 to 4%, which, as we know, that we are getting 0.5% of interest if you are going to save your money into a bank. So this is still much better than depositing your money into a bank. So with that, the Alberta Pacific Forest Industries, which is solely Japanese-owned company, they have this really large craft pulp mill in northern Alberta, which situates in that transition zone, the grassland to boreal forest transition zone. And so they predicted that in the long run, they're going to run into wood fiber supply problems, and they were developing hybrid poplar plantations in the area about 200 kilometers, within the 200 kilometer radius of the pulp mill. And their objective was to plant about 1,200 hectares of hybrid poplar plantations per year for over 20 years to eventually achieve 25,000 hectares of hybrid poplar plantations. And so the initial objective was to provide wood fiber supply, but then with the climate change question and the potential for carbon credits, they wanted us to look at the question of what's the potential for those hybrid poplar plantations to sequester carbon. And therefore, we did two experiments. The first experiment, I call this as the land use conversion experiment, because the company was planting hybrid poplars on marginal agricultural lands in northern Alberta, and therefore we needed to understand the impact of converting agricultural land into a hybrid poplar plantation. The study site was here about the middle of Alberta, and when we enlarged this, the pulp mill is about here, and the shaded area representing the hybrid poplar plantation they have so far established. And the second experiment was to look at carbon dynamics in a corollar sequence, because with that land use conversion trial, we could really only study, with the funding for 3-4 years, we can really only study the first 3-4 years of that land conversion. So in order to gain a better understanding of the carbon dynamics along that rotation, which is 20 to 25 years, so we were utilizing existing hybrid poplar plantations to look at that question of the long-term dynamics, with a caveat that we know that with chronal sequences, we cannot really guarantee, or it's really hard to find sites that were exactly the same when they started. So there was definitely a drawback on using the chronal sequence. So this is an example chronal sequence: 4-year-old plantations, 8-year-old plantations, and 13-year-old plantations. That is age at in 2 or 5, and indicating that the weed control was still ongoing in 4-year-old plantations versus it stopped in the 8-year-old plantation and starting to have the organic horizons to develop the litter accumulation and therefore organic matter horizons to develop in the 13-year-old plantation. So that represents some of the carbon inputs, the changes of the carbon inputs with time. The objective of this study were to investigate if changes in land use converting from agricultural land use to plantation forestry would affect soil respiration and how, if that was going to be occurring. And soil respiration is separated into, so the total soil respiration is separated into the autotrophic respiration by roots and the heterotrophic respiration. And secondly, to examine the relationship between soil respiration and abiotic factors, we were looking at mainly soil temperature and moisture contents. And lastly, to examine the effect of land use change on ecosystem carbon balance. Here, the carbon balance is going to be being evaluated by the net ecosystem productivity, which is the difference between the net primary productivity and the heterotrophic respiration, which is the carbon loss from the soil. And for respiration measurements, we used both the static gas chamber system as well as the automated chamber system, where we can control the frequency of gas sampling. While the drawback with the automated chamber system was not like what Derek was saying, that we could measure all trace gas, greenhouse gases, we could only do the CO2, while the static gas chamber system, we can do all three trace gas because it was analyzed on a GC. And we also did the root trenching method to separate the heterotrophic from the autotrophic respiration. Again, it's not perfect method, but that's the method we used. We also used the we distractively harvest some of the trees to establish biomass equations, including the root biomass calculation based on above ground measurements. And therefore, we can calculate the net primary productivity and so forth. So this is the study site for the land use conversion trial. It's a really simple experiment. Essentially, it's a one factor with two levels. So the agriculture crop was started with barley, and we used the 5-year rotation of barley, barley, alfalfa, alfalfa, and alfalfa. And the hybrid poplar is a genotype is Walker, and used 3x3 meter spacing. So this study started in 2005. And the first year, this is the essentially the timing of hybrid poplar planting in 2005, and the barley was seeded in kind of mid-July-ish because earlier part of the year it was fairly wet and we couldn't get onto the site to do the barley planting. So this is the efflux of CO2. This is the total soil respiration by time. Essentially, we didn't, in the first year after the land use conversion, we didn't really find any treatment effect. There was a seasonal change of the soil respiration. And this was largely expected because with hybrid poplar plantation establishment, we had to cultivate, and also within the growth season, we had to use mechanical cultivation to control the weed. Otherwise, we would not have a hybrid poplar plantation. And therefore, in terms of the disturbance that's ongoing in those two systems, were really similar in the earlier part of the plantation establishment, and therefore the lack of difference between the two systems were kind of as expected. And the earlier part of the study, we didn't really have those automated chamber respiration chamber systems. In 2007 and 2008, we used automated soil respiration chamber systems to measure soil respiration. In 2007, there was a steep learning curve, and we forgot to cover the chamber, the transparent chamber system with aluminum foil and so forth. So there was a confounding effect of the photosynthesis, and therefore that's why most likely the axis here is only 6 micromole of CO2 per square meter per second, versus the scale here is 14 for 2008. So for 2008, the chamber surface was darkened, and therefore this is a measurement of the total soil respiration during the growing season. But regardless, we find that So in 207 and 208, the systems have already converted into the alfalfa. And so regardless of the 207 or 208, we find that the soil respiration was higher in the alfalfa, the agricultural plots. And so for perhaps two reasons. One, as we get into 207, 208, the kind of the disturbance that we were having in the hybrid poplar plantation had been reduced. And secondly, we think the crop rotation would have an impact on the soil respiration here as well. Alfalfa being a nitrogen-fixing species, it demands a lot of carbohydrates from the host plant, and so that certainly would increase the emission of carbon dioxide from the nitrogen-fixing bacteria in the system. Therefore, because of the deficiency with the 207 data during the day, we think that if we take the nighttime soil respiration data, that would eliminate the impact from the photosynthesis. And therefore, we plotted the soil respiration data in 207 and 208 against the temperature. We found that temperature was the only abiotic factor that had significant relationship with soil respiration. We did calculate the Q10, and I guess I'm not going to explain what Q10 is if you don't know. This is a measure of the sensitivity of soil respiration to temperature. Essentially, the regression lines here were steeper, and which indicate that the temperature sensitivity was higher in the alfalfa plots in both in 207 and 208 as compared to the Walker Poplar hybrid poplar plantation plot. So this is indicating that the soil organic carbon in the agricultural plots appears to be more sensitive to temperature changes, which indicate that the carbon in the hybrid poplar plantation was becoming more stable, so less sensitive to temperature changes, which obviously was a good news for suppressing greenhouse gas emissions from this system. So now getting into the chronosequence that we studied, again, because the deficiency of only having 3-year funding to look at carbon dynamics in the land use conversion trial, I'm not going to get into the details of the rates of soil respiration. This again is a total soil respiration. The insert here is indicating the soil respiration rates in the winter time, and those data were, calculated based on the use of the ecosystem model developed by my colleague Robert Grant. Because in the winter time, getting to minus 40 degrees, it was not possible to use either the manual method or the automated soil respiration chamber system measure soil respiration. So there were differences, obviously, that most of the respiration were occurring in the summertime. But in the winter period, there was a fresh of soil respiration due to the the sowing of the soil coming in. In May. What I wanted to point out is that regardless of the age of the plantation, when we separate the soil respiration into heterotrophic versus autotrophic, when we look at the total soil respiration, which is the control, and versus the respiration rates from the root excluded plots, which is measuring the heterotrophic respiration, we found that the temperature sensitivity of soil respiration was higher with the total, in the control plots, or the total respiration as compared to the heterotrophic, which means that autotrophic respiration was much more sensitive to temperature changes. And as the plantations grow older, we find that the Q10 values, or if you look at the slope of those regression lines, or the regression curves, they are getting steeper, and which would indicate that because the autotrophic soil respiration was much more sensitive to temperature changes, indicating that as the plantation grew older, the autotrophic respiration became more important, controlling the temperature sensitivity of the total soil respiration. And the last data slide I have in my presentation is to look at the potential impact of plantation establishment on really the carbon balance, or looking at the net ecosystem productivity, and the net ecosystem productivity again is the difference of the net primary productivity minus whatever carbon is lost from the systems through heterotrophic respiration, indicating that for plantations converting from agriculture to plantations, it likely will take about between five to six, 7 years for the ecosystem to reach a carbon neutral. And the second point is that between 2008 and now, I guess we have a data for 2009 as well, is that there are really strong interannual variation. So the ecosystem carbon balance, depending on which year you're doing the evaluation, it could all of a sudden become negative even for the 8 year old plantations. And so we need to remember that there are really strong interannual variations, largely because of the growth rates, and so the net primary productivity as well as the heterotrophic respiration rates could both change in different years. But essentially, there is potential to use hybrid proper plantations, even though early on it was a net carbon source. As the net primary productivity increases, and the system can become a net carbon sink. This data was confirmed by another study in a different site, but using the 80 covariance system. I'm not going to get into the details. It's indicating that it takes about 5 to 6 years for the ecosystem to become a carbon neutral. So the conclusion for my presentations are that soil temperature essentially was the key driver or controlling the soil respiration rate, which explained most of the seasonal variation of soil respiration, which the soil respiration had greater temperature sensitivity in the agricultural soils as compared to the plantation soils. And crop rotation and crop species had a significant impact on the ecosystem carbon balance. And number three here is that hybrid proper systems acted as a net carbon source early on due to very low net primary productivity because the trees takes time to grow and to develop. And as stands became older, they became net carbon sinks. And in the plantations, the heterotrophic respiration was much less sensitive to temperature changes. And the last concluding remark is that afforestation with fast-growing hybrid poplars in the border region has the potential to sequester carbon and thus to mitigate climate change. And the funding from Alberta Pacific Forest Industries, NSERC, and BioCap Canada Foundation is much appreciated, and some of the people who helped with some of the work is also acknowledged here. Thank you. Well, I guess the system or the market is still being developed, and I've seen some companies like Apcor, which is a power generation company, they are starting to purchase those credits. So I guess in terms of the research, it's trying to demonstrate whether there is any potential.
I'm just wondering, would those payments take account of this process of people called indirect land use change? If you take it out of agriculture, the barley or whatever that's not grown there will probably be grown somewhere else. You know, the Australians will plough up the grass and grow some more, or Indonesians will have ploughs that drain some heat or something. I wonder if that's taken into account, because you might just be displacing it harder.
Right, the question is about potentially displacements of agricultural activities, and I guess I probably not the best person to answer that question, but I guess the hope is that with improvement in management practices and maybe helping to improve the yield so that we don't have to destroy other forests to plant more barley or wheat. And I guess the one of the key issue here is also that the kind of the land we are promoting the farmers to convert is quite marginal. So, you know, really high input needed to get really low output. Yeah. And I think there was a question.
Did you measure carbon with both the automated flux and a closed chamber?
We did. Yeah. Well, I guess initially we didn't have the automated chamber system, so we primarily used the acetic gas chamber system too.
You come to the same conclusion, or you see the same?
We actually, in one of the work the master student did was to compare the automated with the acetic gas chamber, and we got like 0.93, 0.92, 0.93. Correlations between the two methods, so really, really good correlations.
The changes are the same size?
And the same no, actually, the static gas chambers are much smaller. The automated chamber system, the chambers are about 50 centimeters in diameter, versus the static, I think it's about 20.
Okay.